Stay tuned for Bob Benyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Benyart of Denver Bible Church. And we normally take the first 5 minutes of this hour to do a Bible study, talk about Denver Bible Church. But it's February, and in February we have a telethon to try to raise support to keep Bob Benyart Live on for the next year. And our goals are very modest. We have broken our halfway point for our goal of $4,000 in gifts. And then we have a goal of $1,000 in monthly donations. And that's a harder goal. The $4,000 is easier. The donations is more difficult. And so we started this week. And we hope to get done in a week. You know, we don't want to go into February with this. I don't like asking for money. But we've got $2,125 given toward the $4,000. Thank you so much for those of you who have given. And toward the $1,000 in monthly pledges, we have $160. So we're very appreciative. Thank you so much to the people who have given. And also, we've let people know that if you've been thinking about subscribing to a monthly Bible study album, or a monthly video, or the monthly sermons, you can do that. If you do it now, then it'll count toward the $1,000 in monthly pledges. So it wouldn't be just a donation, but you'll get once a month, you'll get some, whatever you order, a video. We've got really neat videos on the resurrection, the death penalty, evolution, creation, so many great videos. Debates, all kinds of debates. You'll enjoy it. They're fun, entertaining, educational. Or the monthly Bible study albums, where you'll begin with an overview of the whole Bible, go through so many of the books of the Bible, learn all about creation, go right through to Revelation in the last days, miracles and healings. The Bible study albums we have, we've got about 30 of them. You get one a month, and that's $35 a month. The videos are $24.95 a month. And the Sunday sermons are $24.95 a month. So if you think you can help, boy, do we need your help, and we need it now. We really do. We're hoping that Bob Benyart Live could be financially secure enough to see us through to next year. And so with our $4,000 goal, we've broken our halfway mark. That was our goal Wednesday night. Now, Doug McBurney filled in for me last night. I was so thankful to him for doing that. We had an event that my wife and I needed to attend for the church. And so Doug filled in, and we got donations and gifts toward this telethon goal last night. So thank you for those who gave. But if you think you can help out, if you're considering it, please give us a call. Hey, if you're not sure, just call us. And who's our call screener tonight? Sean? Sean will talk you into it. In fact, he might double the amount you're thinking of giving. The phone number, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. If you call in and you live in the 303 area code, you could dial 303-463-7789. And that'll ring to the same phones. And then also, you can go on the web at kgov.com, kgov.com, and click on the store. And if you go into the donate page or the subscriptions tab, either one, the donation tabs or the subscriptions, and during this telethon, whatever you give in a donation or if you sign up for a monthly subscription, it'll go toward our telethon goals. And we do need your help. And if you'd like to call in during the air, while we're on the air, please do so. After we get off the air I'll probably be in the studio, for 20 minutes after the show? Yeah. So you could call then or during the week. Leave your name and number. If we're not here, we'll get back to you. And now stay tuned for Bob Benyart Live.
Service.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number here is 1-800-8-ENYAR, 1-800-836-9278. Now, somebody was on the line 1 minute ago asking about the debate at the end of the month, the age of the earth. And this debate, I'm going to be on the young earth side. Don Daly, who's the science teacher at Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, he and I will be arguing for a young earth, that the earth is only thousands of years old. And we'll be up against a couple guys who are with the Reasons to Believe group, and that camp believes that the earth is billions of years old. They believe in the Big Bang and the supernova created the gas cloud that spun into the sun and the moon and the planets and the earth. And so anyway, we'll be debating those guys, and those guys are PhDs. The one is a geophysicist. The other is a professor at CU up in Boulder. And so they're debating the pastor of a small Bible church and a high school science teacher. And so some people have said, Bob, it's not fair. And we've said, yeah, we agree, but we've given them a chance to back down. They haven't, so they're in. They have no excuses now. So we'll see how it goes, all right? And it's going to be at St. Lutheran's Church at Washington Park. Washington Park, that's downtown. Where is that? That's south of downtown, right? It's 700 South Franklin Street. So it's really going to be a good time. And in fact, you could read about the debate at ageoftheearth.com. ageoftheearth.com, and that'll tell you more about the debate. All right. And look at that. They've got a link to Denver Bible Church. That's so nice of those guys. Very nice. Oh, and they have a link to Reasons to Believe, the opposition. Well, I guess that'd have to be, huh? Yeah, so we should have a real good time. All right. Now, Wednesday night on the show. By the way, during the show, if you want to make a pledge or gift, please call. But 2 nights ago, we were talking a lot about Genesis chapter 1 and how God created and what the firmament is, and that God divided the waters above from the waters below. And that in Genesis 1, there's the firmament, and then there's the firmament of the heavens. And he put the heavenly bodies in the firmament of the heavens, and the firmament on earth, he divided the waters below from the waters above. So what's this waters below the firmament? Well, 5 chapters later in Genesis, we find out about Noah's flood has been percolating, and it's about to hit. So God tells Noah, build an ark, and it takes about 120 years. It's a big ark. It took a long time. And then it began to rain. And let me give you a detail that a lot of Christians who know the flood story like the back of their hand, a little detail we often don't pay attention to. How many days did it rain? How many days and nights? Even Bill Cosby knows. 40 days and 40 nights, right? But then, so we read in Genesis 7:12, the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. But then, after the 40 days and the 40 nights, the waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth after the 40 days and 40 nights. And we read over and over, and the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth. And the waters prevailed, and the mountains were covered. And it just keeps, verse 24, and the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days, so that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, but then the waters continued to increase for another 4 months almost. That's cool. But that's a detail that we tend to overlook. How did the waters continue to increase until the 150th day? How many days? Until the 150th day of the flood, the waters continued to increase. How did that happen if it stopped raining after 40 days and nights? The reason that it happened is because The significant source of the water for the flood was in the fountains of the great deep that broke open. Right? Genesis chapter 7, verse 11, that on that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up. And whenever you read about the flood, if it's going to talk about the water, it typically first says the fountains of the great deep. And so we know from the story here that the fountains of the great deep broke open, and then the earth began to flood. And for 40 days it rained, but then it stopped raining, but the waters kept increasing. Why is that? Because there was so much water down beneath the crust of the earth in the fountains of the great deep. There was so much water down there that it would shoot up as the crust of the earth cracked, and it cracked all the way around the whole globe. A crack. Today we call that crack the mid-oceanic ridge, the little mountain ridge that's in the center of the oceans all over the world. Where'd that come from? That's a result of the crust of the earth cracking. And the water that was 10 miles down beneath the earth escaping through an incredibly high-pressured fountain that was around the world. And so when that water gushed up with all the weight of the continent pressing down on it, that water gushed up and it caused rain. And so it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Some of that water escaped the earth's atmosphere, the gravity of the earth, and became the comets that we see. And that's where the water on the poles of the moon came from. And if we find any water in Mars and in the dark, shadowed parts of the craters on Mercury, that's where that water came from. Because the Earth is the blue planet with all the water. The others are all dry, bone dry. Well, they don't even have bones. And if we find any bacteria in a comet or in meteorites, it's because they came from Earth. The meteors and asteroids of the solar system came from Earth when the crust of the Earth broke and the flood began. And so for 40 days and 40 nights, the water gushed up from deep within the Earth and it went into the atmosphere. Some escaped the atmosphere, but a lot of it fell back down as rain. But after 40 days of that process, there was so much water on the surface of the Earth that the water gushing up from under the Earth, it was still going to gush for another 4 months, but it couldn't break through to become rain. It just bubbled up. It's sort of like if you have a hot tub and you fill it up so that it's just barely covering the jets, and you turn it on and the jets shoot the water above the water in the hot tub. They sort of splash. But then if you add a little bit more water, they stop splashing. It just sort of bubbles. That's what was going on. So we'll be back. Hey, and give us a call.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
All right, last night, Doug McBurney filled in. And this is a live commercial break. And at the end of the show, he updated the website at KGOV.com with our telethon tallies. It was $2,000 of $4,000. And 160 in monthly donations. And so by showtime tonight, we had hit 2,125. So we're eking along. We're just eking along. But we're not discouraged. Hey, we've been doing this for 13 years almost. We haven't gotten discouraged yet. But we need your help to continue. So if you can call, that'd be great. Of course, you can mail in a pledge, a monthly pledge or a one-time gift to Bob and Yart Live. N-E-R is E-N-Y-A-R-T. Bob and Yart Live at P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado. For out-of-state listeners, Arvada is A-R-V-A-D-A, Colorado, 80001. 80001. Or you can call or go to the web at kgov.com. And if you go to the web and you click on the top right, get Bob's material, shop online, then there's a donate tab and a subscriptions tab. And either of those will take whatever you give and apply it to this telethon goal. We need your help. Please help. One 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So with the flood, we had the water, the rains for 40 days and 40 nights, and then the waters continued to rise to the 150th day. And then the waters began to subside. Only then were the fountains of the deep stopped. And so anyway, it's really interesting to see what was going on in the flood. And then eventually, well, what happened, what I believe happened, what Walt Brown, Dr. Walt Brown, writes about in such a compelling way in his book, In the Beginning, is that the water that was under the earth, it was about 10 miles under the earth. And when the crust of the earth cracked, now why did it crack? That's a big debate. It's a mystery among creationists. What caused the flood? What was the physical trigger of Noah's flood? And many people believe it was supernatural, that God specifically at that moment triggered the flood. I actually think it was something else, something more cause and effect. I don't think God had to push a button to start the flood. I think the flood was a result of man's sin. Now, why is that? Well, before the flood, it didn't rain, but the earth was watered by a fog, a mist that came up at night in the early morning and watered the ground. And also, there were four rivers, great rivers, that flowed out of, one river flowed out of the Garden of Eden. And when it left the Garden of Eden, it split and became four rivers. And those rivers watered all the earth because it was one landmass, Pangaea, one landmass. And so that water came up from under the ground, an enormous spring from the center of the Garden of Eden. And the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was there, the tree of life, all the trees of the garden. And when Adam and Eve sinned, God kicked them out of the garden. And if you recall, he put an angel on the east end of the Garden of Eden so that they couldn't get back in to eat of the tree of life. Now, why was that? Well, the tree of life is, since God made Adam and Eve with physical bodies, your bodies, even though there's no disease and no death, your bodies still get old. They wear down, your joints, your bones. And if Adam and Eve's bodies were to last forever, just like when we get to heaven, we're going to have bodies. And those living on the new earth and in the new Jerusalem, if they're going to live forever with physical bodies, well, there are consequences to having a physical body, like your joints will wear out, for example. That's just one example that we can easily picture. But then the Bible says that even in the new heavens and the new earth, the leaves of the tree of life are for the healing of the nations. And so to live forever, God made this tree of life that would be so nutritious that that's what men would go to from time to time so that their bodies would not wear out. Now, other than that, God would have to do sort of a miracle on demand system. And after you go to the Lord, like you go for a tune-up with your car, you say, it's been 30,000 years since my last confession, or since my last tune-up. And so I need a new tune-up. But instead of doing that, God gave us the tree of life. So when Adam and Eve sinned and he cast them out of the garden, if they were to go back into the garden and eat from that tree of life, that would enable their bodies to be sustained for many, you know, we don't know, we have to estimate, but they lived for 1,000 years without the tree of life. So it most likely would have sustained them for many thousands of years or tens of thousands of years. And God did not want fallen man to live indefinitely in their physical bodies on earth. Because once we rebelled against God, the only way to get out of the flesh in the spiritual sense and our fallen physical flesh is to die and to be, and for God to give us new bodies. So he didn't want us to live forever in on this earth in these bodies. So he put the angel at the east end of the Garden of Eden so Adam and Eve couldn't get in. Them, they could not, nor could their kids. Well, why didn't they go around to the other side, sneak in the back door? Well, my understanding of the Garden of Eden was that it was like Shangri-La, like this hidden paradise, and there was only one way in. And so the Garden of Eden was most likely a natural, in a natural valley with walls, sheer mountain walls that men originally wouldn't be able to scale. And so it was a protected, it was like a paradise with only one way in, which is really a picture of heaven and eternal life. There's only one way, Jesus Christ. And you go that way or you don't get in. So that's why when the water bubbled up in the midst of the garden, and then the Bible says it went off in four directions to water the whole earth and four great rivers. The Bible says that first it flowed out of the garden, then from there it split into four rivers. Why couldn't it split right away as soon as it bubbled up, going four directions? Because the garden was surrounded by mountain walls. So the water, there was a river channel, a deep river channel that left the Garden of Eden eastward. And once the water left the garden, it split and became four great rivers. And so only at that east entrance to the garden did God need to put a guard to make sure no one went in the garden. Okay, so now with Adam and Eve out of the garden, God had told them when he created them and he made the garden and he said, now tend and keep the garden, till the garden. That was their job. A lot of people think Adam and Eve were just on welfare, unemployment or something. They didn't have to do anything. People think, well, paradise is when you don't have to do anything. That's not true. People who don't do anything, they just vegetate. They fall apart physically and spiritually, emotionally, mentally. God made us to do things, to accomplish work, to be creative. And so God had told Adam and Eve they had to till the garden, and part of that would have involved, what if there were paths in the garden, right? So you could walk from your, you know, your nephew Jimmy's tree back to your tree, and there's a little path. Well, what if you don't prune the trees or till the garden at all for 1,000 years? Do you think they were smart trees and they wouldn't grow over the path? No, it would become totally overgrown. And the waters that came up from under the earth to water the whole earth, those waters were in the midst of the Garden of Eden, the most lush place on earth that had trees that grew to extraordinary heights, we read in the Bible. In fact, the trees in the center of the garden, specifically the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it grew so large that the great cedars of Lebanon would be like branches on its trunk. Imagine a great redwood tree from California, like General Sherman, the tree that they carved a hole in through the middle of it, a tunnel, and you could drive your van through. You drive your van through the bottom of the tree. You go through the tree. Well, Imagine trees like that, the hugest trees we have on earth. And compared to the trees in the garden, they were like branches. Pluck that thing up and put it on the side of the tree, and that's a branch. And it had 1,000 branches. Imagine how huge it was. And not only the one tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but all the garden. The garden became overrun. And the roots of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the other trees, gradually they grew down into that underground spring that watered the whole earth. And those trees eventually choked that water supply. And eventually it dried up. And so what happened was there was a drought that went throughout the surface of the earth, everywhere the land went, that massive continent filled with forest and animal life and human beings, there was a tremendous drought. And so we read in the book of Ezekiel that men were angry because of this drought. And even the trees of the field had wilted. And so what happened was that because man sinned, he was kicked out of the garden. And because he was kicked out of the garden, 1,650 years later, the waters were stopped up and the drought started. And what would happen when the four waters, the riverhead, the headwaters for the four rivers that watered the whole earth, they stopped flowing. They were bound up in the earth. Would the pressure increase? Well, whatever was forcing that enormous amount of water out of the earth that probably flowed at, perhaps we could calculate what would it take to feed four rivers that would be the source of fresh water for a continent that went around most of the earth. That's a massive quantity of water. Would it be 1 million gallons a minute or something like that? Whatever it would be, it was a huge flow. And over 1,650 years, the trees in the garden, their roots grew to incredible depths and size and eventually choked off that water supply, bound it up. And so that pressure under the earth built and built and built until the crust of the earth began to crack. And that's what started Noah's flood. The crust of the earth began to crack, and that crack, once it started, because the crust of the earth was like this very pressurized rock sphere. And once that started to crack, the crack went all the way around the earth, about 3 miles per second in each direction. And in about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, it circled the entire earth until it met itself on the other side in like a T or a Y shape. And that crack eventually became the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. And so the water that was 10 miles down under the earth began to rush out of the crack that now had become this huge crevice around the earth because the crust of the earth split. It's an incredible story. And as that water rushed up with such force, it eroded away the 10-mile high cliffs that were on each side of the crack. They began to erode away. And the Atlantic Ocean that's there now, it wasn't there then. It's a result of that erosion of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. And it's just an extraordinary story. And then what happened was with eroding all that rock, billions of tons of rock, made that part of the crust of the earth lighter. And then just beneath the crust, the floor of that ocean, that water chamber began to rise. Howdy to those listening on the web at kgov.com. One of our friends who went with us to Israel called in here and we were talking about the trip to Turkey. And boy, he'd love to go to Turkey because we had such a good time in Israel. He said, I don't know if I can afford it. It's $3,590, right? $3,590 round trip out of Chicago. He said, I don't know if I can afford it. We'll see. I'm going to try. And let me make a pledge, an additional pledge to what he's already given of another $25 a month. And so my office staff said, what are you doing? Don't give the money. You need it to go out to Turkey. Save your money. And he said, well, what do you want me to do? Go to Turkey or give that pledge? And we said, we don't know. We want it all. Come with us to Turkey and pledge if you can. If you can't, we understand. But, hey, for those listening in Denver and in Colorado via KLTT, we're going to Turkey May 26th. And it's going to be the trip of a lifetime, 16 nights, round trip out of Chicago for $35.90. And it's not just going to be a trip. It's going to be a trip of the lifetime with the best tour guide that Turkey has to offer. Bora has been doing trips for 30 years, tours there. And then I'll be doing the Bible portion of the tour and why the cities we go to. That's where Paul, of Saul of Tarsus, he was born in Turkey. Noah, the Ark, landed in Turkey. That's where civilization began after the flood. And the Apostle Paul, his missionary journeys. And Jesus Christ wrote letters to seven churches recorded in the book of Revelation. Those seven churches were in Turkey. Turkey is such a key location for understanding the stage, the context for major parts of the Bible. And we invite you to come along with us. That's May 26th, we leave. A number of us will drive from fly from Denver to Chicago, but then Chicago round trip to Turkey. It'll be fun, so come on and join us. So that's my proposal. Now, Monday night, we're going to have Dr. Walt Brown on the show. We're going to interview him. And he is now my number one favorite creation science author. He is so good. His book, In the Beginning, has just, it's just totally wowed me. I've been reading science since I could first read. When did I start reading? 1964. So 40 years I've been reading science. But creation science I've been reading since 1973, 30 years. 31 years, and I've read a lot of the authors, and I've loved their work, and creation science has been getting better and better, and Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning, is right now the pinnacle accomplishment of creation science. I feel like I understand the creation and the flood so much better now than I have in 30 years from reading this book. Significantly better understanding. So if you have a question about creation or about the flood, feel free to call in. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. I'd like to know what your thoughts are about it. But 10 years ago, I remember looking at the moon, and clear as day, and then I did this for years afterward. I look at the moon, and I'd say to my wife, Cheryl, why does that moon look like it was beat to a pulp? I mean, it's less than 10,000 years old. Why is it so pockmarked? What's going on? And the near side is way worse than the far side, because the near side has got about 20 major hits where the impacts were so great they created huge lava flows. The impact of the meteors hitting the near side of the moon were so enormous that the energy, the meteor vaporizes and the energy melts the lunar rock, the surface. And so that lava has covered up many of the craters. So the near side looks a little smoother than the far side. The far side has a lot more littler craters. And the far side has had like half as many lava flows. And so what happened was when the Earth's crust cracked, then that water erupting with such a force with 10 miles of continent on top of it? The continents pushed down so hard that the water and rock shot up into outer space, a lot of it, so that the Earth lost a bit of its mass. We had 100% of our mass to start with, and after the rupture phase of the flood, we were down to 99.94% of our mass. So we lost a little bit, not 0.1%, but 0.06% of the mass of the Earth. And some of it hit the moon and put the moon through the ringer. That's why it looks the way it does. Some of it went to the near planets as meteors, and the comets were created at the time of Noah's flood. And that's why you look at comets and they look like they came from the Earth. They're 85% water and they have methane. What in the world are they doing with methane? That's like on Earth from life. And they have ethane. And what else do they have? They have dust that's crystallized just like rock on Earth. It's the most common rock on Earth is what we see in the comets. What's with that? They look like they're from the Earth. Why? Because they are. If we find a speck of bacteria in a meteorite, why? Because it's from Earth. It's from Earth. And so as that crack widened with the erosion, it took out all the forest that was the Atlantic Ocean, was covered with, you know, hundreds of thousands of square miles of forest were now gone. And most of it became sedimentary deposits on the surface of the Earth. And some of it got shot out into space. And a lot of the rock. And so as we study, so then we look on the Pacific side of the Earth, the other side of the Earth across from the Atlantic, and we see that it has these huge trenches, the oceanic trenches, like the Mariana Trench. How deep is the Mariana Trench? How many miles? 3 miles? Nah, it's deeper than that, isn't it? 13 miles? No, not that deep. I got to recall how deep the, maybe I have a map here. Let's see. I've got a bunch of the trenches in the Pacific, the Western Pacific. Where's the Mariana Trench? 6.86 miles, about 7 miles deep. And they're all deep. And what happened was, and they also, they have this shape to them. The trenches have this shape. And we could see what happened. As the Atlantic Ocean was rising, because all that 10 miles high of continent material is gone, so the crust of the Earth there got lighter. And beneath the crust of the Earth, the pressure is enormous on the sphere of rock. And so it began to buckle up at the Atlantic Ocean. It came up. And so in the Pacific, it sucked down. And then as the Atlantic Ocean buckles up, there's still water under the continents. It's been being released now for 5 months. It's been coming up. But there's still a lot down there. So what happens is the Atlantic Ocean is rising and the continent is split in half with the Atlantic Ocean. It was never there. Now it's there, 300 miles wide or so or more. Maybe I lost track of that. 800 miles wide maybe. Then since the Atlantic Ocean raised up, the continents are now like tilted on a hill because they're attached to the Atlantic Ocean, and that's raising up. So the Americas are raising up, and their eastern edge is much higher than the western edge. And Africa and Europe are raising up, and their western edge is much higher than the eastern edge. And they have water under them. So eventually, they broke loose, and they started sliding on the water. And they slid, and when they stopped sliding, that's when the the continents were compressed and the mountains buckled up in huge overthrust of land and strata and folding. Huge, enormous sideways pressure and events that you look at it, it's pretty obvious they happen quickly. You see mountains that are all crushed, compressed horizontally, and they got all these smooth curves in them. And it wasn't, the strata were still soft, just laid down by the flood when they compressed these mountains, when the mountains were raised up. And so that's how the continents ended up where they are right now. And we've seen on a map that you could take the continents and squeeze them all together and they fit nice. Have you ever seen, I'm asking my engineer, have you ever seen that? Yeah, he's seen it. And in reality, there's something a little funny to that because the pictures we've seen with the continents all fitting neatly together, they've been rigged a little bit. For example, Africa, they fit so nicely together. In fact, I'm looking for one of the pictures right now. Here we go. It's a pretty well-known. All the continents fit together. Well, to make them fit so nicely, they shrunk Africa by over a third. That's cheating. You can't do that. And they tilted Africa and Europe in opposite directions to fit them in. So the continents do sort of fit, but not like that. They fit with the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. When the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, when that crack came up the Atlantic and the waters began to burst forth and then the erosion started that would form the Atlantic Ocean, the continents follow the contour of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. That's why they look like that. And that's why they sort of look like they could fit together, because they're on the two sides of that ridge. And so with understanding the flood, and it goes back to understanding creation a little better than we often do, then we not only get a handle on the earth and its origins and the flood, but then also the moon and our solar system and the asteroids and meteors and comets. We start to get a handle on all that. Because God created, let's say, Jupiter and its four large moons. What are they called? I forget. Europa and Io and Callisto. And what's the fourth one? Whatever it is. God made those moons, and it looks like he tuned them perfectly so that the outermost moon, when it orbits Jupiter once, the one within it orbits twice, within that four times, within that eight times. And the three inner ones are virtually perfect. But with these meteors crashing into Jupiter, they nudge some of that perfection just a little out of tune. Bob Enyard here. So I invited you to Turkey, right? You're cordially invited to join us to Turkey. The bus, we have a 2002 Mercedes bus, state of the art. And the price for the trip includes round trip airfare out of Chicago. We'll do a little bit of flying in Turkey. It includes that. It includes great hotels, breakfast and lunch, all tips at the breakfast and lunch. It includes breakfast and dinners. And all tips at breakfast and dinners and hotels. And you're responsible for lunches and tipping the bus driver. And then whatever spending money you want. But so we're going to have a great trip in Turkey. We'll probably end up with about 20 people. And it's 16 nights. We leave May 26th out of Chicago. And so we'd love for you to come and join us. And we're really going to get to know one another. I mean, we've done this now. We've gone to Israel a few times, New Zealand on a Bob and Yurt Live trip to, where do we go to New Zealand for? Oh, yeah, to harass Bill Clinton. And to Italy. with dear friends from the show. And so each time it was the most wonderful trip. And this is looking like it's going to be another example of a great, great time and a trip of a lifetime. Really will be. So we'd like you to come along. Now, back to business. The telethon. I'll update you. And boy, do we need your help. We do need your help if we're going to stay on another year here. Our goal is $4,000. These are modest goals. These are not like get-rich-quick schemes. This is a very modest goal. $4,000 and $1,000 in monthly pledges. And so if you could perhaps make a pledge of $50, $100, or maybe somebody out there can give $500 and help us get to the $3,000 milestone. We really need the help, so please call 800-8-N-YARDS or go online at kgov.com. All right, 1-800-8-N-YARDS. So that's the Walt Brown's understanding of the flood and of creation. And you know what? It just keeps getting better and better and better. Like the frozen mammoths, the woolly mammoths, how did they freeze? How do you get buttercups in their mouth and digestive tract and stomach that are not digested? And the mammoths are frozen solid so quickly that when they thaw, dog sleds, the dogs start eating the woolly mammoth. They eat their trunks, they eat their legs, and the scientists have to try to keep the dogs away from the mammoths because they're fresh meat, because they froze solid just 5,000 years ago. Well, the way you get that is by the water coming up from under the earth. Some of the water left the solar Earth's gravity to become comets. But most of the water stayed on the surface of the Earth or came right back down to the surface of the Earth. The water that didn't quite have the velocity to escape Earth's gravity, it went so high into the atmosphere and then it didn't leave into outer space, but it came back. That water came down super cold. Super cold. And the water that fell at the poles, especially in Siberia and Alaska, it trapped animals and that's when the flood first started. Before the crust of the earth had time to begin to get covered with water, feet of water, right off the bat, the first water that shot up came down and froze the woolly mammoths and other animals in their tracks. They didn't even fall over, a number of them. They're frozen standing up. And in their lungs, you know what they find? Dirt and dust in their lungs and in their throat and in their digestive tract, they got dirt. In other words, all of a sudden, everything started to get covered with dirt. The air was filled with dirt. And it hailed. And it's a different kind of hail than we find anywhere else on Earth in history. It's a big chunks of hail. In fact, explorers that first found this stuff, they called it rock hail. And they described it in detail. It's a different kind of ice than we have. And so we can understand woolly mammoths, frozen woolly mammoths. And the strata that is all over the continents of the earth. The continents, two-thirds, are covered with sedimentary deposits an average of a mile deep. A mile deep. You have sediments that go for hundreds of thousands of square miles. Sediments that go miles down in the ground. Sometimes a sedimentary layer, one layer, will be 1,000 feet, 100 feet thick. And then multiple different layers. We've got limestone in the Bahamas, we think goes down 6 miles. It's unbelievable. These huge, colossal features of the surface of the Earth. How did it happen? Well, the chambers under the surface of the Earth, subterranean chambers, they were filled with water, and the chambers themselves were lined with different minerals like limestone, because the vast majority of the limestone deposits on the surface of the Earth are not from animal seashells. It's just mineral limestone. And on the bottom of that chamber was basalt. And so the basalt began to erode, the limestone, carbon came up. The water, we believe that the water that was under the continents was a bit different from the water above, in that, for example, there's heavy hydrogen in ocean waters. And what is the ratio of heavy hydrogen atoms to normal hydrogen atoms? I think it's for every 3,200 hydrogen atoms in seawater, one is heavy hydrogen. And what is heavy hydrogen? Well, I don't know if I remember my chemistry, but I think it's an extra neutron in the nucleus. Is that what it is? And at any rate, that's the kind of water that we believe you'll find 10 miles down below the crust of the Earth, because that's the kind of water that we find in the comets. And so this theory ends up making all kinds of significant predictions. For example, the frozen mammoths. Here's one prediction Walt Brown makes in his book, that we will not find fossils, any strata or fossils below woolly mammoths. There'll be none. That's a neat, oh, look at this. We got a gift. Okay, a $50 gift. Thank you so much, Richard. You know what city he's from? All right, we're not sure. Richard, we're not sure what city, but that's okay. Richard with a credit card number, $50 gift. Thank you very much, Richard. I got to write that down here. That is so kind. Writing it down so we don't forget. All right, that's so we're up to $2,175. Ha ha! Victory is in sight. You see, you got to be the eternal optimist. You know, if you read the Bible, you find out that we win in the end. So don't sweat the small stuff. So $2,175, and our next milestone is $3,000. Boy, we need your help. And believe me, we don't want to do this for the whole month of February. I'd just rather not do it. So if you could help, you know, somebody out there might be able to give $1,000 and in one fell swoop break us through to the $3,000 milestone. Boy, we'd be at $3,175. Then the rest would be a piece of cake. So, and then a monthly, you know, if somebody gave $40 a month, that would hit us to $200. And that would be great. So if you can help, please call us, 1-800-8-NYARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. So that's basically the understanding of creation and the flood that I now have, that I believe is way more crystal clear than what it had been. The notion that the firmament was the sky, and that the waters above the firmament and the waters below the firmament refer to some type of a water vapor canopy. And that concept has been really put through the ringer. Now, I believed that for about 30 years. And I've come to see that the arguments against the vapor canopy are indefensible. You can't defend them because the water canopy, there could not be a significant amount of water above the atmosphere to come down in Noah's flood. It just couldn't be. And so what I have now realized, and it was so clear once you see it, and that's the way it is with many mysteries, I never really thought about, okay, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, and then the waters continued to increase for another 4 months. What's with that? Because I used to picture the vast majority of the water coming from the rain. You know, you hear Bill Cosby's deal about the pregnant elephants getting on the ark and all, and it starts raining. But the Bible stresses the fountains of the great deep broke open. And then the windows of the heaven were opened. And so that's what was going on. And so after the 40 days and 40 nights, when it stopped raining, the waters increased for another 4 months practically because it was the fountains of the great deep. And then when the continents were covered with the water and the Atlantic Ocean had eroded from nothing, and now there it is, and the stress on the pressure underneath the floor of that ocean was so great with the weight of the rest of the earth there, and that became bare, that began to buckle up. And it buckled up, and it came up so high from where the base of the water had been originally, 10 miles down, now it started to come up to near the surface of the earth. It came up miles. And as it came up, it pushed the continents up, and then the continents began to slide downhill on water. And as they slid downhill, they crunched and formed and became very thickened and formed the mountain ranges. And they went way up out of the water. And so you know what else that solves? The ice age. Because what's with all the ice? How do you get an ice age? How do you get 100 feet of snow and ice across continents? Well, you know what's difficult about doing that? You need, if the whole earth is cold, you can't have an ice age because it won't snow. Because when it's cold, there's no evaporation. You don't get enough precipitation to build up snow. So the oceans have to be warm and the continents have to be cold to get an ice age. How do you get warm oceans and cold continents? Well, the water bubbled up from under the crust of the earth. It was warm. And the continents slid and were compressed and were pushed high out of the water. So here we're in Colorado right now. Back then, we would have been in Leadville, Colorado, where it gets really cold because it's a lot higher. And the continents were initially much higher than they are now, and that made them heavy. So they sank as the ocean floors came up and everything reached a stasis point, a status quo. And that's where we are now. And Monday night, we'll have Dr. Walt Brown on the show. He's got his PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And, hey, he was a professor at the Air Force Academy. And we're just real excited to have him come on the show. It's an honor. And, in fact, we've started selling his book in the beginning, $24.95 a copy. It's what a great book. So, hey, thanks for tuning in, and call us if you can, all right? I'll be here for 20 minutes waiting for your call. This is Bob Inert reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.